91.3 WLRN presents Topical Current. There's a chance, perhaps, that a historic third member of the Bush nuclear family could next reside in the White House. That is, if former Florida Governor Jeb Bush can win Republican primaries and such. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. This hour, we consider the state's two-term governor's career with University of North Florida political science professor Matthew Corrigan. He relates how John Ellis Bush reworked the state politically and added power to Florida's executive branch with his brand of conservative activism. His political views are more conservative than even his brother George's. Corrigan has written Conservative Hurricane, How Jeb Bush Remade Florida. First, NPR and Regional News. And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you this afternoon. Bonnie Berman has the day off. This hour we examine the past and present of Florida's former two-term governor, Jeb Bush. He's trailing in the hunt for the Republican presidential nomination. He's polling around 11% now. Of course, he faces next year's marathon of primaries. With us now is North Florida University political science history professor, political science professor, Matthew Corrigan, and we'll discuss Matthew Corrigan's new book, Conservative Hurricane, How Jeb Bush Remade Florida. And he joins us from public station WJCT in Jacksonville. Welcome to you, Professor.
Hey, good afternoon, Joseph.
Your book is on the University Press of Florida, and you're the chair and political science professor at North Florida University. Tell us about, it seems odd, George Herbert Walker Bush, President 41, George Walker Bush, 43, now John Ellis Bush, maybe 45. That would certainly be history.
It would, and I think that's one of his biggest hurdles right now. Many voters cannot get past the fact that this would be the third, you know, Bush from an immediate family. And when I start talking about the book, I throw out 2 years, and one would be 1984. That's the last time the Republicans won the presidency without a Bush at the top of the ticket. And then 1972 is the last time the Republicans won the presidency without a Bush on the ticket. So it really is a question of how Jeb Bush can show himself in many ways to be his own person.
Your book really talks about Jeb Bush's conservative streak. Yet, is he too moderate for today's Republican Party?
Yeah, I think you've got two things going on there. Number one, if you look at his record as Florida's governor, which, you know, the name of my book obviously talks about, it's a very conservative record. And everything from social and cultural issues, I mean, you can remember the Terri Schiavo incident. He called himself the most pro-life governor of modern times. And if you move into educational issues, we can talk about that later, and business and privatization issues, it's a very conservative record. But what's happened since he's been governor in 2007 is obviously the emergence of the Tea Party movement, or the, you know, probably this year, which may not call it the Tea Party movement, just the protest movement in the Republican Party that just wants to really do away with the political establishment. And you can't be more part of the political establishment than to be a Bush. So I think that's what he's running into right now.
I remember waiting to do this program on the afternoon of Jeb Bush's second inaugural and listening to him when he closed out. He turned around and gestured toward the state capitol there in Tallahassee and said, "I want all of this to go away." It doesn't get much more anti-government than that.
Right, yeah. Basically, his idea was that if we could clear Tallahassee of all the government workers, that would show that you don't need, you know, government for the most part. And so clearly he had a very conservative governing agenda, and what stood out is he got it passed and implemented. And there are all sorts of problems with the implementation. But if you look, you know, up to Washington today, obviously with the president of one party and the legislature of the other party, they're having a difficult time doing anything. And even in our own state capitol, where you have Republicans controlling, you know, the whole government, they still couldn't finish on time, and there's a big, you know, split between the House and the Senate. But that didn't happen under Bush's tenure. I mean, he had ideas and got them passed, and it's an impressive record in terms of having an agenda and getting that agenda through the legislature.
Could Jeb Bush be credited some way of helping to actually pave the way for the Tea Party?
I think so, because, again, if you look at Florida's history, you know, Republican governors are not that frequent. In fact, when he won and the legislature stayed Republican when he won, it was the first time we've had a Republican really unified government since Reconstruction, you know, in the 1870s in the state. And so, you know, he started a rightward tilt in Florida politics. And if you think about it, we haven't had a Democratic governor since he's been elected. And that's really an amazing feat in a state that should be, that has more registered Democrats, number one, and where Democrats have won during the presidential years.
So you're saying then that the first Republican governor, Bob Martinez, he didn't control the legislature. That was Democratic control still?
Correct. And then you had Claude Kirk in the 1960s. And so we've had Republican governors. They just haven't left the footprint in terms of governance that Jeb Bush did. And even, you know, between the time he left being Florida's governor and decided to run for president, he's had, you know, a varying relationship with some of the Tea Party, and particularly the governor of Maine he supported. He supported other Tea Party candidates. But what a lot of Tea Party supporters can't get past is really his brother, George W. Bush, expanding Medicare in terms of offering help for purchasing drugs, and the whole idea of the bailouts of the financial sector in 2008. So in some ways, not in some ways, and in a lot of ways, that last name has hurt him tremendously with some of the most conservative elements of the Republican Party.
Well, getting away a little bit from the purview of your book, though, let me go back in history a little bit. How did the first Republican governor, Bob Martinez, get the shift in Florida from a largely Democratic state to leaning Republican, and have Bob Martinez, the Republican, replace one of the most popular Florida governors of the 20th century, Ruben Askew?
Yeah, you know, Florida, when you use the word Democratic, Democrats of the 1970s and 1980s are much, much different than the Democrats of the 2000s. And it was really a centrist state, center-right almost. You know, I don't think anybody would call, you know, Ruben Askew, you know, a far-left candidate. Clearly, he had some progressive policies, and in many ways, he had to go around the legislature sometimes to get those enacted. But what Martinez did is he ran against a very liberal Democrat, somebody from up here, Steve Padgett, who's a very successful attorney and well-known player in Democratic politics. And I think, you know, Martinez just presented the case for change. And it worked out. But it was only one term. And if you remember, he proposed a tax on services that was very unpopular and probably, you know, brought him down.
Like professional services, beauticians and...
Correct. You know, all services, where sales tax is usually on, you know, products. This was a tax on services, and it became very unpopular, and it was eventually repealed. And, you know, Lawton Chiles, you know, a Florida political legend, ran for governor and won.
Let's go back to 1980. Jeb Bush moves to Florida and takes up real estate. What are the circumstances of that move to Florida?
Yeah, I think it's probably the most important part of his resume and history. You know, this whole idea of the Bushes being an American political family who are elites really came from some very close calls. And just a couple I'll mention, and then I'll get to 1980. In 1970, George H.W. Bush had lost a Senate race in Texas, the second time he had lost that race, and was probably politically dead until Richard Nixon brought him to Washington, where he started a number of government roles, everything from the chair of the Republican Party to CIA director to an envoy in China. And that really brought him back into the political scene. And even Ronald Reagan, whom H.W. ran against in 1980, really gave a lifeline to H.W. Bush by making him his vice president. And if you recall, Gerald Ford was being considered for that position, but basically Ford wanted a co-presidency and Reagan didn't want that. So he picked the runner-up, H.W. Bush. And that really kept the Bushes in the national conversation. And then, of course, H.W. Bush ran 8 years later and won. And then in the 1990s, both of his sons ran and won as governor. But going back to 1980, Jeb Bush had worked on that campaign with his father and a losing effort. But he had started to organize and worked Florida to start that organization. And he realized when he came to Florida that it was really a frontier that needed to be conquered for Republicans. And there was all sorts of possibilities, especially in Miami with the heavy Cuban American population and the strongly anti-communist Cuban American population. And so with his wife, of course, who's of Mexican descent, when they decided to move to Florida, they didn't come up, you know, where I'm from and come to where, you know, I'm from up here in Jacksonville, the more conservative part of the state. They came to Miami. And I think they enjoyed the Hispanic culture. I think he also saw a political opportunity and worked very hard. As you recall, he became the chairperson of the local Republican Party and worked on registering new Republicans. And probably some of those registration efforts paid off later, 20 or 16 years later when his brother ran for president race in 2000.
Sorry. Briefly describe Jeb Bush's relationship with Armando Codina, besides being business partners.
Well, that was the number one part, is that when Bush came to Miami, you know, he was looking for business opportunities, and Codina offered him that. And Codina had long relationships with the Bush family, including his father. And it really gave Jeb Bush an entree into Miami, and an important entree in terms of business and in terms of political connections as well. And I think the Codina relationship just solidified his relationship with other Cuban Americans in Miami.
We're speaking with Matthew Corrigan. We're talking about his new book, Conservative Hurricane: How Jeb Bush Remade Florida. Time for a short break. We'll be back with more. And we're back with North Florida University political science professor Matthew Corrigan. We're discussing his book, Conservative Hurricane: How Jeb Bush Remade Florida. Joseph Cooper with you this afternoon. Professor Corrigan, tell us about, describe Bush's loss to Lawton Childs in 1994 and his quotes that were very prominent in the campaign concerning black citizens.
Yeah, it was a completely different type of race than he ran 4 years later, and a completely different type of race than he's running right now. In some ways, I've made the comparison, really, 1994, Jeb Bush was the movement conservative of his day, the Ted Cruz of his day, if you will. He ran a strong race to the right, and he almost won. He almost beat the incumbent governor, Lawton Chiles. It was about a 60,000 vote difference, which in Florida is not a huge amount. Really, he started out by being clear that he was going to be a conservative that called himself a head-banging conservative. And when someone asked him what he would do for African Americans, it was in the context of a longer sentence, but it came down to him saying probably nothing. And obviously, when you say something like that, it brought a lot of reaction. He also had a very conservative lieutenant governor nominee, and basically put forth proposals. You had mentioned that he wanted to get rid of government workers in the state capitol. In the 94 race, he actually advocated for canceling or removing the State Department of Education, not the federal, but the State Department of Education. And some teachers may think that's a good idea right now, but I mean, that's where he was. That's how conservative he was. And he lost a very close race, which goes to show you that Florida's electorate in off years, and what I mean by off years is off presidential years, can be very conservative. And 4 years later when he ran, he didn't change that many policies, but he definitely changed his tone. And he won much more of the African-American vote than he did in 1994, and he won rather easily over Lieutenant Governor Buddy McKay.
We're speaking with Matthew Corrigan. He's a political science professor at North Florida University. So tell us more then how he changed tactics to win that election and become governor.
Yeah, Joseph, our public relations people at the university will kill me if I don't say it. It's the University of North Florida.
I'm sorry. So
that's fine. In 98, he had spent the 4 years really traveling around the state. He started a charter school, one of the early charter schools, with the head of the Urban League in Miami. That experience really seemed to change him in terms of, number one, really caring about the education issue, and number two, understanding urban issues a little bit better. Ironically, that charter school ultimately failed long after Bush had left it, but it was kind of an interesting experiment. But I think the experience had a big impact on him. And he also visited, you know, many other schools around the state and traveled extensively. And so really, after the loss in 94, he basically just started running again. And by the time he got to 98, he had been working with a political consultant, Mike Murphy, who's now in charge of his presidential super PAC, who really managed to moderate some of his language and emphasize education, emphasize the idea that he was reaching out to other Floridians. He won the 98 race fairly easily.
We have an emailer here who would like you to touch on his tenure as Florida Secretary of Commerce and how that affected his chances of becoming governor. Of course, this was before the first race.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure it had a big impact because I'm not sure how many Floridians even knew he was had that position. So, but I think what it did was give him an experience in state government, and he didn't like it that he didn't stay that long. And he joined his father's campaign in 1988. But what it did show is that, number one, he was very ambitious because he tried to do a lot of things. but he didn't really, his department really didn't have the budget to do much. And number two, he became very frustrated with the slow pace of change in Tallahassee. And so I think he brought those attitudes with him when he, you know, was elected governor.
Tell us about Jeb Bush's, how he was viewed by the Cuban expatriates and his support then, therefore, of the Cuban embargo and also the Orlando Bosch pardon situation.
Yeah, he had a very strong relationship with the Cuban American community, and for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think that's what he believed. He believed in a very muscular foreign policy towards Cuba and Castro. And number two, politically, it just made a lot of sense. I mean, if Republicans were going to make a stand in Miami-Dade, it had to be with the growing, at the time, Cuban-American community. And so I think he understood that. So when you combine those two factors, it really highlighted his political strength in the state that he could branch the Republican Party out to the Hispanic community. And what that brought about was, and you mentioned the Bosch incident, it brought about several times where he really either sought out or advocated for Cuban expatriates whose records weren't always lily clean. And so that presented some issues for him, and it may be brought up in the campaign if he gets further here on the presidential level.
Was that sort of his support of the Orlando Bosch pardon and of the boycott of Cuba, did that sort of set the stage for 2000 and his popularity among the Miami-Dade County Cuban immigrant population and their support of Bush in the election of 2000 debacle?
Sure. And remember, you know, the Elian Gonzalez issue came up as well. When you look at Jeb Bush's record as a person who built something politically, it really starts with Miami and it starts with the Cuban American community. That's where he really stands out in terms of, you know, he's gotten so many questions this cycle about, you know, how does he differ from his brother or his father? Really, his experience in Florida politically is a lot different than what they did. And I think he's going to have to talk about that a little bit more, because if he keeps getting thrown in with his brother and father with this idea, I think in the Republican Party and probably in the Democratic Party as well, that we just want somebody new, it may hurt him.
Perhaps the unpopularity near the end of his term of his brother?
I don't think it helps. I think like most former presidents, as time goes on, George W. Bush has gone up a little bit in the approval polling. But remember, he left office in the middle of two wars and an economic recession, the greatest recession, you know, we've had probably since the Great Depression.
And the Republican candidates all skirted around him completely.
Sure, sure. And so it's again, a not a great act to follow, if you will. And I'm sure that's why he didn't run in 2012. But, I don't think he's handled that question very well. He keeps talking about how much he respects his father and his brother and doesn't want to, you know, speak against them. And I think everybody understands that. I think he's got to make it clear that he's his own person. And this presidential election's about the future, not the past.
The most recent polls show him barely being more popular than Marco Rubio. And ironically, wasn't Jeb Bush a mentor of Rubio when he was in the legislature?
Sure. Now, some people say that relationship's been exaggerate a bit, but clearly the political dynamic was Bush was in charge, and Rubio learned from Bush in many different ways. when Rubio won his seat on the West Miami City Commission, Bush called him that night and in 1998. So Bush knew he was Rubio was a politician on the rise. I doubt that when he made that phone call, he envisioned that he would be running against this West Miami City Commissioner for President of the United States. Really coming from that debate the other night, Rubio was just better. I mean, he had more energy. He was clearer. I think it's going to be a challenge for the Bush folks to find a happy medium here because, it looks like the Republican electorate wants a fighter. And what Bush has been talking about is how he can bring the parties together, how he's going to be more civil. And I think those are all commendable things, but it doesn't look like that's going to resonate with the Republican electorate.
Well, of course, Jeb Bush has greater time in office than any of these candidates have had. Does that make him just seem to be very mediocre compared to these vibrant characters who are talking very big and very harshly?
Well, I think, with the Trump phenomena and even Ben Carson is polling well now. Now, I think we all have to take a deep breath on polls right now. I think, November and December is when, I think the polling really matters, except, of course, if you don't get into the main debates, that's a big deal. But and then with the primaries and caucuses, things can change, within a week pretty quickly. But at the end of the day, I think the Bush campaign does have to deal with the fact that, at least in the polling right now, it's the anti-government or anti-elected officials who are doing better. Donald Trump and Ben Carson and now Carly Fiorina. And so that's a problem. If you add all those percentages up, that's probably about 35-40% of the Republican electorate. So that means you got to sweep most of the other part of the Republican electorate. So it's a challenge, and I think they're going to have to change strategies because this Trump phenomenon has taken everybody by surprise, and the fact that he's still leading the polls. I don't think he's going to be the nominee, but he sure is taking up a lot of space.
There will be some attrition, of course, of these 10 candidates as we go on. As they fall off, of the race, would Bush perhaps be able to stay viable and be in the top two or three because of his experience and to some people, his name?
Yeah, I think his name, and obviously he's raised a tremendous amount of money. And I think they understand this is going to be a long endeavor. In other words, I think most of the caucuses and primaries, the early ones, are what they call proportionally representative. So, you need to get a certain number of delegates to win the nomination, and most of these early contests are proportional. So that means there's not going to be a lot of people, getting a lot of delegates. And so it's going to be spread out a bit, and that's why Florida in the middle of March is going to be such an important primary, and it may be either the rebirth of Jeb Bush or the end of his campaign, because I think Florida is going to be very important.
We're speaking with Matthew Corrigan. He's a political science professor at the University of North Florida. He's also the author of Conservative Hurricane, How Jeb Bush Remade Florida. And we'll have links to that at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Stay tuned. We'll take a break and be back. And it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper. Bonnie Berman has the day off. She'll be with us tomorrow, of course. And we resume our conversation with Matthew Corrigan, Professor Matthew Corrigan. We're talking about his book, Conservative Hurricane, How Jeb Bush Remade Florida. If you'd like to join in with a call or an email, that's easy enough. Our number, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email radio@WLRN.org. Radio@WLRN.org. Professor, before we get into more about on Jeb Bush, we have an emailer who wants to learn more about Jeb's grandfather, of course, Prescott Bush.
Yeah, you know, the Bush family has been in this business since the 1950s, and Prescott Bush ran for a senator from Connecticut and lost initially, but won later on in the decade in the 1950s, just a interesting footnote is that. You know, we've had all this discussion about Planned Parenthood, and one of the reasons Prescott Bush lost in Connecticut, now remember this is the 1950s, is that he was affiliated with the local Planned Parenthood organization in terms of advocating for birth control. And, of course, it wouldn't be abortion in the 1950s, it was birth control. And Connecticut was heavily Catholic at the time, and that was used against him. And so... you know, what I take from the whole Prescott Bush era is that H.W. Bush moved to Texas, which is about as far away politically from Connecticut as you could get. And basically the grandsons of Prescott Bush understood that if they were going to be successful in the Republican Party, it wouldn't be as Northeastern Republicans. They had to be Southern conservatives more in the light of Reagan. And I think that's a path that they tried to follow. And I think, again, if you look at Jeb Bush's career in the 90s and the early 2000s, very hard to call him a moderate. And so it must be either very frustrating or very surprising to the Bush family, especially Jeb, to be going through this again, this ordeal of, are you conservative enough? Because all of the Bushes have had to deal with this question at one time or another in their political careers.
In your book, Professor, you mention a biography written quite a few years ago about Jeb Bush by S.V. Date, a reporter. And he roundly criticized Bush's governing style and also his relations with the media, and that he was very difficult to get along with. You did point out that he and S.V. Date had some history together that was antagonistic. But what was Bush's governing style that this reporter criticized so strongly?
Well, you know, the name of my book is Conservative Hurricane, and the reason I use the metaphor of the hurricane is, number one, probably his most effective governance was during hurricanes. But number two is he dominated the political scene here in Florida. And S.V. Date is talking about is, a different type of Jeb Bush than we're seeing on the national level now. Really someone in Florida who ruled by his political strength and not his political charm. Now, some of your listeners in Miami who have personal relationships with Jeb Bush probably see another side to that. But I think for the rest of Florida, and especially in Tallahassee, he was unchallenged is probably too strong, but he ruled the roost pretty strongly when he was governor. And that's why his race for the presidency is so unusual in a way, because he's trying to come across as this moderate who values civility, and really he may have to return more to that governing style in Florida in his campaign, because I think the Republican electorate is looking for a fighter.
How did he set the stage really for the governorship of Governor Scott, in that he made the executive branch so much more powerful than either of the other two?
Yeah, he really did, and some of that was timing. The state constitution changed in 1998 through the voters, and it shrunk the size of the cabinet
to three
and
members.
That gave, it gave more power to the governor, and he took advantage of that completely, and he made it clear that, you know, the biggest expenditure, now sometimes Medicaid may get up there as well, but usually the biggest expenditure in the state budget is for education. And he made it clear when he came in the governor's seat that he was going to be in charge of education. And so when you take over the biggest line item in the budget, you've got a lot of power. And at the end of the day, you know, he didn't get told no very often. The only government institution in Florida that told him no were the courts.
Again, we're speaking with Matthew Corrigan. He's a professor at the University of North Florida. And we're talking about Jeb Bush, former governor, two-term governor of Florida. Let's take a call or two. Our number, 1-800-743-9576. First up, it's Chloe. She's in Miami Beach. Hi there.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Yes, I wanted to pick up on something that I hear constantly, and your guest today has sort of repeated this. I think it's a false notion to suggest that Jeb Bush would distance himself or compare himself to the father and to his brother. I would point out that they leave such a different legacy. I think it's very unfair to the father to tarnish him and put him in the same bag with GW. I mean, the father had a chance to invade Iraq after the first Gulf War. He had the brains. He was realistic. He had James Baker as his, secretary to remind him what a disaster it would be to go into Iraq. And then, of course, we know the son did, based on a lot of misleading information given the public and the world. Same thing with taxes. I mean, I just think that the father's legacy, the father actually got into Yale on his own brains, and this GW got in as what they call a legacy student. So I feel that it's unfair. No one in the Bush family would like to point it out, but clearly the father's record was much less damaging to our country than GW. So I find it unfair to just lump them, and I was pleased that Jeb has essentially said that the brother, you know, knowing what he knows now, he thought the invasion of Iraq was probably not the best choice, but I think it's unfair to the father. And I did have one question regarding hurricanes. Would your guest, does he know anything about some accommodations and favors that were done to the Latin Builders Association in terms of norms, if construction norms and roofs and how the buildings are built? I heard that the Latin Builders Association was given some favors, and that resulted in, you know, weaker construction and more damage.
Okay, that's a lot of material. Professor, have at it.
That's a lot. There's a lot going on.
Well, it's foreign affairs, and then it's local affairs. So
okay,
you know. Okay, sure.
Thanks for
the
call.
I'm not lumping the three of them together. It always comes up in media questions, and it came up in the debate the other night. Clearly, H.W. Bush was different from W. And I make the point in my book is that the philosophy of both W and Jeb Bush is different from H.W. But at the end of the day, when a voter who doesn't live and breathe politics looks up and sees the last name Bush, that's the first thing that's going to come to their mind. And Governor Jeb Bush is going to have to be clear on how he is different, because he keeps getting this question and he doesn't want to criticize either his father or his brother. And so it's a difficult situation to be in. But when you're the third Bush from an immediate or third person from an immediate family, you will get to that. On the subject of the hurricanes, I don't know about the particular issue you're asking about, but I will say that the praise that Jeb Bush gets for the hurricanes was actually, I mean, during the hurricanes, you know, in terms of getting relief supplies and so forth as quickly as possible. No one is ever happy, and we've all gone through it. If you've lived in Florida, you've gone through a tropical storm or a hurricane at some point. No one is totally happy with, you know, how long, you know, relief supplies can take and things like that. But clearly, Bush did better than most governors in that situation. The long-term impacts of the hurricanes, I think, is a different issue. The citizens' insurance that really came up, and citizens' property that who became the major insurer of difficult properties in Florida to insure has become a major issue. And I think some of the rebuilding contracts, you know, came up. But in terms of the day-to-day management of the crisis at the time, Jeb Bush has received pretty high marks.
We're going to take a short break on Topical Currents and resume our visit with Professor Matthew Corrigan after this break. And 49 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman will be returning tomorrow. And we're speaking with University of North Florida Political Science Professor Matthew Corrigan. His book is Conservative Hurricane, How Jeb Bush Remade Florida. Professor, we have a lot of emailers who seem to be interested in this topic, and I'd like to ask you also, with all the research you've done of this this political biography of Jeb Bush, his role in the election of 2000 and how he affected possibly the election.
Yeah, I didn't look at that extensively. I started off the book with that topic because, again, when people outside of Florida think of Jeb Bush, a lot of times they think of the 2000 election. The two criticisms I have of Jeb Bush and my look at the 2000 election, and again, it's not a major part of the book, but number one is the purge of voters before the election. It wasn't clear where the lines of authority were with the Secretary of State's office and the governor's office. The Secretary of State's office started a purge of voters who they thought were felons, at least that's what they said, and they ended up taking legitimate voters out with that purge. And when that purge started to have problems, I thought the governor should have stepped in at that point and said, just stop it, and he didn't. Now, the Bush people argue that really wasn't in the governor's domain, but, you know, clearly he could have made a statement at the time. I don't believe that there was a huge conspiracy election night or anything like that, because Jeb Bush actually apologized to his brother on election night because they thought they had lost Florida. So I don't think election night itself, there were something that Governor Jeb Bush did or to influence the election one way or the other.
But did he influence the rulings of Catherine Harris?
Yeah, again, I haven't looked at it extensively. I think that there are emails showing that he had interest in it, obviously, but nothing. I think that the Civil Rights Commission came up with that showed a direct connection. But the other area that I would criticize about 2000 is, and I don't know if a lot of people remember this, is that when the court rulings were going back and forth, the state legislature came up and said, "Well, we're just going to award the electors to George W. Bush," because under the U.S. Constitution, the state legislatures decide how electors are distributed in the states, and in most states, obviously, use the voters to make that determination as approved by the state legislature. And when the state legislature brought that idea up, the governor did not swat it down. I mean, could you imagine what would have happened if the state legislature just declared George W. Bush the winner? So while I don't think there's necessarily a smoking gun, clearly the election process was a mess, and it left a stain on the state.
Of course, we mentioned earlier that Jeb Bush's wife is of Mexican descent, and his immigration policy has been rather soft compared to some of the hardline Republicans. Is he too soft today for the Republican Party on the topic of immigration?
He very well may be.
Viewed that way.
Donald Trump is getting a lot of traction. That's really where his candidacy took off, with that terrible comment about Mexicans, and so it's going to be a tough battle. There are other people on that stage who have similar views to Jeb Bush, but Jeb Bush is I think recognized on having these views. And again, with your audience, I just think his experience in Miami gave him this different view of immigration. And I think most political consultants will tell you that Republicans are going to have to figure out this issue in a way that doesn't involve mass deportations or building big walls or whatever, or they're never going to get a majority of the Hispanic vote, which, of course, is the biggest demographic that's growing in our country and obviously in our state.
Let's take another phone call. We're getting a little bit short on time, so I ask our callers to be brief. This is Raymer in Boca Raton.
Yes, I want to ask the professor, in the Terry Schiavo case, I thought what Bush did in that case was just horrible to that family, and he tried to stop her husband from taking her off life support. And did that have much of an effect, do you think, on the electric, because I remember a lot of people were just outraged that he got involved in what was like a personal matter.
Yeah, that's covered extensively in the book, and clearly it was taking the powers of the governorship to I think an extreme. The courts came back very strongly and said this was a separation of powers issue, and that the legislature and the governor were basically trying to overrule a court decision.
He got the legislature to pass a bill, correct?
Right, right. And the Supreme Court struck it down unanimously, the Florida Supreme Court. He didn't really pay that much of a political price. Now, and it's been brought up a couple of times during his presidential run, but hasn't really caught on. I don't fault him for his beliefs. I do fault him for targeting Michael Schiavo. I've never understood that, the husband. Basically, the governor threatened to investigate the husband and implying that the husband might have had a role in what happened to Terry Schiavo when there was no evidence of that. So I think it really showed, and that's what I wrote in the book, it was an episode that showed how stubborn he was, how strong he held his beliefs, and his lack of judgment. I thought that was probably the worst episode of his governorship.
Do you think that cost Mitt Romney independent votes?
Oh, no. I think that it was so long ago in terms of that. I don't think it had a big impact on Mitt Romney. It will be interesting if Governor Bush's campaign catches some steam, which it doesn't seem to have a whole lot right now, whether that comes up again. And I think if he made it to the general election, you would hear more about the case.
Well, let's look into the future as a political science. What would it take for Jeb Bush to become viable in this election cycle?
Oh, I think he's viable. I mean, I think he's one of the four or five people who can win the nomination. The problem is, if you'd asked me this 3 weeks ago, I would have said he's the one of two who could win the nomination. So there's a lot of people running. This Trump phenomena is completely unexpected. So I think his campaign of trying to be the adult in the room just isn't what a lot of Republican voters are looking for. If he's going to win, it's going to be a war of attrition, and he's got the money to do it. And what I mean by that is, a proportion from this state, a proportion from that state, and keep building it up and really trying to survive until you get to the Florida primary and then win the Florida primary. And that's what he's looking at right now.
Well, we certainly want to thank you. It's been a very interesting hour. We've been speaking with University of North Florida political science professor Matthew Corrigan, and his book is Conservative Hurricane, How Jeb Bush Remade Florida. It's on the University Press of Florida. Thank you very much, Professor, for spending the hour with us.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for tuning in. Apologies to those callers we couldn't get to. Our program was produced by Richard Ives, technical direction by online producer Paul Leary. It's easy to get a free audio download of this program at our website, wlrn.org. Follow the radio links. We also have plenty of information, photos and such, and also links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program begins with a Medicare update for those needing information about how benefits are affected by the Affordable Care Act's recent court ruling. Of course, we'll be taking your calls. Also, an update from the Greater Miami Humane Society's CEO, Laurie Hoffman. This is Joseph Cooper. Bonnie Berman returns tomorrow. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.